This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, you're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on Channel Q and Radio.com. Tonight, I am super, super excited. I have someone co-hosting with me who I've actually known for a very long time, Rebecca Ishida. She's kind of like a triple threat. She is both a therapist in the local LA area. She's also one of the cooler people I know, but she's also a comedian.
Yes, I am.
So what is it like being both therapist, comedian?
Well, I love it because, I mean, I think really what's so important in therapy, too, is to use humor. Yeah. You know, we have to laugh about things. And there's grief and loss and trauma and things we deal with. And I think it's important to laugh about those things.
Yeah. And how at all, if at all, does your clinical practice show up in your humor? Because, you know, our jobs are not boring. Like, you work in the sex relational stuff like I do.
And absolutely.
So we get gifted and blessed to hear and to be brought into, like, the deeper
right.
parts
I mean,
of people's lives.
Exactly. I mean, I feel honored, so honored to listen to people's material and things that they share, their secrets, their lies. I feel so blessed to hear all that. And I definitely use that in my comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, HIPAA. So no.
Well, explain to people what that means.
No. Oh, just everything is confidential. The relationship you have with your clients, and you never share their name or things that would break that confidentiality.
But the clients help you tap into universalized struggles that have some humor.
Absolutely.
To them.
Like, you know, sex stuff, yeah. And that stuff can be really fun on stage to talk about.
A crowd pleaser.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't hold back there.
Yeah. Well, when I was talking about bringing you on, I was sitting in the green room with the producers, and I was telling them my infamous favorite story that you told me once.
Oh my gosh, here we go.
Yeah. So Rebecca has a son and a daughter, Ethan and Emily.
Yes.
Who are both phenomenal children. And I don't remember which one it was, but Rebecca was coming out of the shower and one of them said, "Mom, you are so beautiful." And Rebecca said, "Thanks, honey." And they said, "Your face, not your body."
I cannot believe that you remember that story. I've tried so hard to forget it.
It was so profoundly hilarious to me. And you're like, "That's my kids."
Well, I also have another interesting one that Ethan said. I think he was probably about 13 and he was in the car with his friends. And he comes out of the car and he says, "Hey, Mom, where's the clitoris?" And I thought it was awesome.
That's right. Wait, because, that's it? That's the whole story?
Well, I told him where it was, you know, with like a diagram.
Good.
But, you know, but that's the thing. It's like, how wonderful this, a man who wants to know where the clitoris is, right? I mean,
he's the only one.
The only one.
He's one of the few men walking around out there that now understands where it is.
Exactly.
And he's only in his teen years, so that's great for his future lovers. But it's funny you brought that up because that's what, yes, well done. There's a few memes centered around that, but yes, that's that.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm glad you're here. Me and Rebecca worked together clinically for many years. I never actually made it out, though, to see your stand-up.
Well, I'll be doing stand-up January 13th at Echoes. If anyone wants to come see me, they'll see a different side of me.
I love it. I'm also now cleaning off some of my paperwork because Rebecca was kind enough to spill my Red Bull all over my pyre of articles and whatnot.
There you go, being blamed for everything.
Exactly.
That was my life.
As she's sitting there, I'm like shaking Red Bull off of everything. And like my arm hair is like sticking in it to the counter. Yeah, so we haven't talked in a while. I just came out of a engagement with a comedian.
Wait a second. I think I maybe knew that he was a
porn performer and comedian.
Okay.
Yeah, double threat.
Double threat.
Yes, very good with the mouth.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, both careers mandate
exactly.
that.
Exactly. That's important, but both, not at the same time.
Exactly. Both careers mandate a lot of oral skills. So
exactly.
It was always fun at home in some capacity. Okay, so this is actually a really beautiful segue. So I talked about this actually a lot. I talked about this on the air this week and also on the morning show. I do Therapy Thursdays on the morning show. About Tumblr banning all adult content. Or did you hear about this?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay, so the advancements in that, though, is that there's a lot happening, and I want to make people aware of this. Facebook, are you familiar with this?
No, I mean, okay. I live on Facebook.
So Facebook has released a new bunch of rules, and they're banning users from the use of a lot of sexual terms and buzzwords.
What?
And the list is really, really disturbing. And what I mean by disturbing is they're really, really basic. So basically, some of the content, that you're not allowed to post is anything that they're calling quote unquote sexual solicitation, because what they're basically doing is the loophole in order to take away sexual freedoms is they're pinning it to the attempt to try to stop sex trafficking and child exploitation,
okay.
Which a very meaningful goal.
Sure.
But none of the things that they're banning or blocking actually it lead to those things. So Facebook is blocking sex, discussion of sex or sexual partners, sex chat, nude images, vague suggestive statements such as looking for a good time tonight, sexualized slang, sexual hints such as sexual roles, sexual positions, fetish scenarios, sexual preferences, states of arousal, terms that have to do with parts of the body like the breasts, the groin, the buttocks.
Gosh.
I mean, it goes on
that
and on.
That is ridiculous. What am I going to talk about?
Exactly. There goes your entire life on Facebook. But what makes me really scared is that not only is that, you know, rolling us backwards in terms of sexual freedoms and liberations, but it highly impacts sexual art, erotica, and also just people like us that are working in sex therapy or sex education.
Exactly.
We are very easily banned and blocked.
Right. Absolutely. It's so important to share that material and to get it out there. And also to, it sounds like it's sort of being demonized. And that's not helpful for people to learn, to grow, or definitely not sex positive.
No, it makes me really nervous, because I was talking about this on the morning show where I work with a multitude of individuals and clients where things like Tumblr were for them the only resource they had to find erotica and sexual content that matched who they were, that a lot of the adult industry centers their films around specific bodies, generally white, always cisgendered, always gym bodied, always large anatomy. And for people that are fat or non-gendered or LGBT or kinky or whatever it is, they go to Tumblr to find representation. And so the removal of that just really removes them feeling kind of desired and reflected in the world.
Yeah, that's so unfortunate. There has to be a better way, a different way, but it's like censorship.
It totally is. Yeah. And again, some of these words are such broad terms that I don't really know how they're going to block the use of that. It shuts down everything.
Well, it's like Facebook police, I guess. What, you'll get reported? Or
well, it's so simple. So I was at the airport recently, and in a tweet, I called out a particular veggie burger company because every time I eat their burger, I feel sick. I didn't tweet at them. I didn't hashtag them. I just casually, in a sentence, mentioned them. And for whatever reason, I guess there's now formulas that trigger recognition because the company reached right out.
Oh, wow.
And again, I didn't hashtag them. I tweet at them. So there's sensitive software now that can pick up on terms.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but it's scary too.
Are they going to do a new formula for a better burger for your belly?
I hope so, because every time I eat that thing, I feel sick. And it's often the only veggie burger that these places offer.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, that's really surprising, because there's also banter you have with friends.
Totally.
You know, and
adults.
Conversations you want to have. Sex is such an important part of a relationship.
Yes.
That just seems ridiculous. I'm very surprised. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and they said it, and one of the key statements was they're blocking it and banning it regardless of your age.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's heartbreaking because, again, I work very hard on helping people feel confident in their gender and sexual identities and in the sexual acts that they engage in. And this is just kind of pushing us away from that. So it breaks
my
heart. I'm nervous about what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So that's scary to me. okay. So how up to date are you with, like, some of the memes and the things that go viral? Yeah.
Some of the memes. My kids love the memes, so okay. I know some of the memes.
Well, we're going to take a little break, but quick question. Have you heard about the male strippers being brought into the nursing home?
No, but I want it.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to dive deeper into this. You're listening to Loveline on Channel Q and Radio.com, Monday through Thursday to 7 to 9 p.m., and we'll be right back. All right, we're back listening to Loveline. I'm Dr. Chris, and tonight I have my good buddy, a comedian, therapist extraordinaire, Rebecca Ashida. And also we have our question for the night, the biggest secret you've kept from your partner. So go on our Loveline Instagram page, answer that. We're going to check in on that later in the night. In the meantime, we have a caller on there, yeah?
Yeah.
Not only do we have a caller on the air, we have Rebecca's mom.
Oh,
we scored. How are you, Mom?
Oh, I'm fine. I think I must be the last person on earth that Rebecca wanted to have a call in.
But you might be right.
I wanted to.
But the first person, you're the first person I would want to call in. You know what I mean? Like, this is gold. This is radio gold. So
thank
Deborah,
you so much.
Hi, Mommy.
So Deborah,
yeah.
Which part of Rebecca are you prouder of? Her therapist side or her comedian side?
Actually, you know, you really can't divide her. She's really a fantastic person all around.
Aww.
But I do stand-up comedy, and so I must say I like her comedy a lot. But I've also heard she's a good therapist. So there we go, a proud mother.
Aww.
And she will owe me $50 for saying that.
I haven't seen her comedy yet, but I'm definitely going to come out and see it soon, because this one, when we worked together clinically, she had me laughing nonstop.
Right. She is very, very funny.
I get it from my mother. Yes.
She's a wild one. And those two little nuggets of hers, they're nonstop laughs too.
Oh, they are cute.
Right. They are wonderful kids. I love them to pieces. Yeah.
Mom, do you have a sex question?
Well, I had a question related to what you were mentioning about Facebook banning all these things. That's, you know, it's almost like, you know, what about a free speech? You know, because I was just thinking, Lenny Bruce, the wonderful comedian, who was imprisoned for saying words that we can't say and I can't say on the air. But, I mean, are we going back again to that place where everything that people says is put under a microscope? And
right now?
You know, I mean, that is really bothersome to me,
yeah.
You know.
Well, right now it's just sex that they're targeting. I mean, I would be happy if they were taking down Nazis and the hate speech and all that, but that's fair game apparently on Facebook and Tumblr. But anything sexually related, that's the danger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know, and that is a thing, and so that's what I was, I just wanted to basically make a statement and ask that question, and I do agree we should take down all the hate, the other hate stuff, and the racism, and the people that are against lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgender, all that hate that goes into it.
Mom, you're awesome. And, you know, I have to tell you, Mom, that's where I got all my liberal thinking and my sex positivity was from you. You always told me that sex was a celebration of love, and I remember I told you the first time I was going to have sex, remember? 60? No.
And
no,
I remember I used to hear the noises in my house.
Oh my gosh, Mom.
Rebecca's a loud one.
Anyway.
She's a loud one. Not quite when it comes to that. Thanks for calling
thanks
in.
Mom.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Deborah.
Bye-bye.
So for some people, that's the worst nightmare, to have their mom listen and then call in. But I love her. That was great.
No, she's fantastic. And I'm used to it, because my mom is, she and I have a good relationship and sometimes a difficult relationship, but a very open relationship. And we talked about everything at the dinner table.
Yeah.
You know, my parents were both physicians. We talk about, size, everything, you know?
Two physicians at the dinner table. So as we were, I was teasing before the break, this warmed my heart. So in the UK, their Make-A-Wish Foundation, which is an organization that people that are in the final stretch of their lives, they try to give them their last final wish. A woman in a nursing home, a resident of a nursing home, her wish was she wanted a man. She wanted strippers to come to dinner. So the organization hired a group called Hunks in Trunks, a catering and entertainment company, and they came wearing pretty much nothing but aprons and served this elderly resident and her friends dinner.
That is fantastic.
That was her final wish.
What did they serve? Pigs in a blanket?
Yes.
That is awesome.
Just lots of wieners. It was just, that dinner was tons of wieners.
That is so fantastic.
Yeah.
I just love that.
What would your final wish be if you had to make a wish?
Is it a sex wish or is it what kind of wish?
I guess it could be any wish. Do you think in those terms?
Gosh, I don't know. I think the idea of now I'm thinking of death. If we're thinking last moments, like just the idea of being surrounded by love and my kids. And
oh, you went to the sweet answer. That's
I went
adorable.
To the sweet answer. But oh, if I want something, you know, the idea if it's my, you know, like when people talk about last rites and last meal,
yeah.
I wouldn't be able to eat.
No,
I would be
I
too
either.
Freaked out. I mean, so it's hard to say.
For me, it would center around travel.
Oh, I love travel.
I don't get enough of it. My schedule keeps me in LA and it's quite expansive in that I have like a day or maybe two max off a week.
How can you go to Europe?
I can't go very far. I can go to Europe in my mind.
But you have to take some time for yourself.
You know how,
self-care.
You know how that song says, like, I've been to Paris, I've been to France, but I've never been to me? I'm the opposite. I've been to me. I've just never been to Paris. I literally have, but it's been a while. I keep only getting to myself. So yeah. I need to, over the break or sometime soon, take a trip.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to build that. That's so important to do that. Mm-hmm. Traveling is the best education.
Where's the last place you went?
I went to Spain with my kids in July. That
Phenomenal.
Was unbelievable.
Just the three of you.
Yeah, the three of us. And I ended up seeing my ex-boyfriend who I was with, you know, forever ago. That
he
was amazing.
He happened to be in Spain.
Well, he's Spanish because when I lived in Spain, I met Cesar. And I don't know, maybe I don't know if he can listen now, but I told him about the show.
I didn't know that you ever lived in Spain.
I lived there for a year. It was fantastic. It was for me, like the best experience. I think that's when you learn the most about yourself and others, a culture. I mean, it just was amazing. So I got to share that with my children. So.
There's a magical formula. So psychologically speaking, some theorists have said that once you've been in a new culture for about 3 weeks plus, that's when you finally immerse yourself in.
Mm.
You finally have let go of your quote unquote like Americanized ways of being, and you've really started to absorb some of it. So to be somewhere for a year, like you're in. But most vacations are so short that you're still thinking in your American mindset. You're still very much a tourist. You're not really absorbing the culture.
Well, there were, you know, it was a group through college. So there were groups where they just traveled together and they went to all the American bars and they all just kept speaking English. So even though they were there for more than 3 weeks, I don't think they immersed themselves in the culture. But I did because I had a Spanish boyfriend.
You sure did.
So that was pretty fun.
You went all the way into the Spanish culture.
All the way.
That's how my family traveled. We would rent a car and go way off into the countryside or the island or wherever we were to really just absorb like the local cuisine and the customs and just really try to experience something different.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Yeah, because I remember being in Italy and near the Parthenon or it was somewhere major. There was like a McDonald's across the street. Uh-huh. And it just lines out the door.
The Pantheon is yeah. my most favorite thing in Rome.
It's stunning.
It is unbelievable.
It's overwhelmingly stunning.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, but there's like a McDonald's across the street or something.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and everyone's in line. I'm like, really? You came all the way over to here to Italy?
Well, my kids ate McDonald's.
And that's
in
what you
Spain.
Want? Oh, well done. Well done, mom.
Thanks.
You're a proud mom.
I'm a great mom.
That's my kid with that McDonald's crown on. So right now, there's a lot of talk around Kevin Hart was asked to host the Oscars. And as happens when someone gets a position, some kind of advanced position or their profile raises, people start doing deep dives into their Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been uncovered is, you know, every now and then someone will discover a problematic tweet of some sort, but he has a flood of problematic tweets. When we come back from the break, we're going to kind of dig deep into what is being emerged
wow.
from that
okay.
and kind of the impact it's going to have. You're listening to Loveline on channelqandradio.com, and we'd love to hear from you. If you have a question, a thought, an issue, 833-568-8669. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. All right, we are back, and tonight in the studio, I got my co-host Rebecca Shida. What's up, Rebecca?
What's up?
I haven't seen this lady in a long time.
Too long.
Sure thing. So before the break, I was talking about Kevin Hart, bless his soul, and how when you become a celebrity, aka your profile raises, people start doing a deep dive into your Twitter. And before I get into that, I have someone who follows me, and if you're listening, I see you. And what they do is every now and then they'll retweet a tweet of mine from like 3 to 5 years ago.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, you are really scrolling, like you were going deep to get into
you're
my thoughts.
Popular.
And it's interesting to see what are the things that they retweet, because a couple of them were a little, I've never tweeted anything problematic, which is really, I'm proud of that. I never went into that, but it's interesting to see the really obscure random things they're retweeting. I'm not sure I understand why. So I understand the anxiety some celebrities have of like, oh gosh, before I was in the public eye, like what might I have said? And it's like a wake up call. What you're putting out into the world matters. People are listening. So what's been coming up is from Kevin Hart, who's just been asked to host the Oscars, is a lot of anti-gay commentary where he's dropping the F-bomb, F-A-G-S. Some people don't like to hear that word. I try to not use it. Mm-hmm. Mocking lesbians, putting down gay people. And it's not just like a tweet. It's, look, I have pages of all the different tweets.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
And basically, they fall into the whole thing of, here's an example of one from 2011. Yo, if my son comes home and tries to play with my daughter's dollhouse, I'm going to break it over his head and say in my voice, stop, that's gay. And he went on, and again, that's not even the most problematic one. So it goes on and
violent,
on.
It's violent, though.
It's highly homophobic and violent. So the debate right now is this. Should the Oscars fire him? Or still use him, which would possibly be seen as an indirect way of supporting the homophobia. And are people allowed to be seen as they are now? Because I do support the idea that who someone was many years ago, they're allowed to evolve and be better. Like the whole premise of therapy is that people can change and people can get better and people can improve. And I'm glad I'm not held accountable to thoughts I might have had or things I might have said a decade ago. Mm-hmm. I would take responsibility for it. I'd
but
apologize.
Did you have hateful beliefs like that?
I did
See,
not.
That's the thing.
And nor did I put them out into the world if I did. And here's the catch. His response was not an apology.
Okay, so that's problematic.
He basically called everyone who's reaching out about this stuff angry people and is angry at the angry people.
Projection.
Yes.
Right. Well, that's a really tough one. I think that... Look, he's incredibly famous, and I'm sure he can get away with a lot. But then again, there's the Me Too movement, and there are a lot of people that lost their jobs and have been taken off shows, et cetera. Why is this different? You know, this is horrible, and I think it perpetuates horrible ideas of the gay and lesbian community. And
A community
which is also really big in Hollywood. So
what is big in Hollywood?
Gay and lesbian community. They're strong,
for sure.
Strong in Hollywood. And and just in general, what kind of message are you sending to people that who aren't out, who are struggling, you know, kids that are scared to come out, and they maybe look up to Kevin Hart?
I point this out too, that if you're in the public eye, you're an influencer, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And there are people that will be healed and act better if you call that out, or they'll be reinforced their problematic behaviors. So for other guys that are fans of his work, he's letting them know it's okay to talk to your kids like that. And like, look, God bless you all, but you don't know if your child is trans. You don't know if your child is gay. You don't know if your child is non-gendered. So we throw these things around, and the assumption is that it's not going to have an impact on our child down the road. Kevin Hart's children might actually be gay. Who knows? But more importantly, his fans might have a gay child. And he's reinforcing the idea that his male fans can talk to their kids like that.
Right.
So it's scary. And I'm glad we're paying attention to this stuff, because we got to eliminate this. Look, my co-host is a heterosexual, and her and some of the people I've worked with have been profoundly impacted when I tell them what's going on around the world. Like, we think that everyone has it the way we have in America, where there are some protections against LGBT discrimination. But in other countries, you can be jailed and
killed,
murdered.
That's right.
For being
thrown
gay.
Off buildings.
Yes, or supposedly being gay. So this stuff matters.
There are camps in Russia.
Yes,
you know, that
still.
Are, yeah, that still goes on. Yeah, I mean, that's a hard one. I don't know. I don't imagine that. I don't know. My sense is they probably won't end up pulling him. I don't know. What do you think?
When are the Oscars? Do we know what month they are?
I'm not sure when.
Hello, producers. Hi, over here. I'm the host. Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you guys.
I think
quick
in
question.
March, are they?
When are the Oscars? Do we know? My producers are like in the back baking a cake. Producer Emmy's like, I'm sorry, I'm busy. I'm making brownies. I'm like, that's cool. Check in with me in a minute. We'll find out. March.
I was right.
Okay.
I said March.
So there's still enough time for them to maybe make a statement. Oh, it's even sooner.
Oh,
okay.
Wow. That's wow. I'm
so
surprised.
They better hurry up and make a decision as to whether or not they're going to support. Because here's the thing. Look, I am one of those people where I will ban something. Mm-hmm. I will stop supporting organizations and institutions that allow things like this. So I don't generally watch the Oscars anyway. I'm not a fan.
Hmm.
That's a whole other story we can talk about if you're interested.
Sure.
But
it kind of annoys me.
Yeah, if he's hosting,
too lavish, and I mean, whatever.
Here's my other thing. Ready? Here, y'all, listeners, hear this the way you want to hear this. I'll decide myself what the best movie of the year is. You know what I mean? Like, the voters aren't going to tell me. Because a lot of time I'm like, yeah,
gosh,
I don't agree. I'm going to go with
so
mine.
That says so much about your personality.
Yeah. Shocker. I'm going to go with what I thought. Like, you're not going to sway me. So I already decided who the movie of the year is and the best actor
really,
and actress, so I don't need to watch it.
But did you watch all of them?
I've seen probably none of them. I don't go to the movies often, and when
did
I do,
you
it's
see
for
Stars Born?
Movies.
That was pretty amazing.
I have not seen that. I have heard by many people it's probably the best movie they've
pretty
ever seen.
Beautiful.
They actually said the best movie they've ever seen. Is that too big of a statement?
Not really. It was quite beautiful. It was really well done. And there's, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but there's a scene in there that's incredibly powerful and pivotal that I was very impressed by. Yeah.
Will I know it when I see it?
You'll know. You'll be like, oh, this was the scene she was talking about. But I don't want to give anything away, so I won't tell you.
Okay. I've been hearing some of the soundtrack. It's a little too whaley for me. I'm like, all right, we get it. You know, I hit the one main song. She just rips it hurts my ears. It's like Ariana. I'm like, oh, we get it. It hurts. Stop.
I wish I could sing. That's like a dream of mine.
Really?
Oh, I like to perform. I love karaoke, but...
Oh.
You really?
Well, you said you can't sing. I don't want to hear you sing that.
Oh, my, but I'm fun to watch.
Oh, okay. I take it back.
I stay on the beat.
What song? Know? What's your go-to?
I like Love the Weather Girls. It's Raining Men.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Do you love that song?
It's all right. I would rather see you do like an Aerosmith ballad.
Oh, I like the Pina Colada song.
Don't know what that means.
Really? You don't know the Pina Colada song?
No.
It's actually, if you listen to the lyrics, it's about how they cheat on each other and then they find their way back to each other.
Who sings this? Who is this?
Oh, I forget the guy's name.
Is that Kern or is this an old song?
Oh, I can't remember the guy, Pina Colada. I can't remember names, but the Pina Colada song is a fantastic go-to for karaoke.
Is easily sung.
In your coladas.
Oh, isn't that, what's that guy?
They send an ad.
The island guy.
I don't think it's the island guy.
But you know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea.
Someone call in and tell me who the island guy is. You know what I'm talking about?
They kind of are like bored in their marriage.
Jimmy Buffett.
It wasn't
Jimmy
Buffett, though. It's a different dude. Oh, there you go.
But you could see where I think it was Jimmy Buffett.
Yes, I think a lot of people think that.
Okay, I'm just asking. So I have a very important question to ask you. This is very important. So I need everyone to get really serious right now. No, but we're going to go there. So Rebecca,
yes.
How many days do you think it takes to poop out a Lego?
I think that would take.
I'll give you a little background.
I'm going to say about.
Because if you swallow
48 hours.
Because if you swallow a coin, you'll pass it in about 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh! Well, that's a long travel.
Correct. And you said about 40 hours. Close, 1.71 days to poop out a Lego. Now, the reason why I know this.
I am so awesome. Maybe that's because.
You're a mom.
I have a Lego situation. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, you're a mom. Your kids have probably swallowed many things. Mm-hmm. So there was a study done.
Okay.
This is actually research. They recruited a bunch of test subjects, made sure none of them had a history of any intestinal surgeries or problems, and had them all swallow the plastic head of a Lego figurine. They wanted to find out how long
and
it took.
Why? Why is this done?
Well, they had two different measures. Apparently, I'm in trouble. Oh, say pass. Excuse me. I was told by my producer I'm not allowed to say this one word, but the SHAT word, which stands for the stool hardness and transit score. But I can say fart, right? But fart stands for found and retrieved time score. And they basically put a formula together, and it comes down to 1.71 days. This is why I love research in science, because it gives us all the information we really need.
You know, I think they should do I've been thinking about something they could research is, you know, how things change over time sexually.
I love it. We're literally going to go to a break, so hold that. This is such a good segue. You're like looking down and rubbing your leg. You're like, I got this one. All right, guys, you're listening to Loveline on channelqandradio.com. Give us a call, 833-568-8669. And also go on our Loveline Instagram page. We have a question of the night. We're going to be tackling that at the end of the show. Weigh in on that. Take a little break, and we'll be right back. All right, we're coming off of World AIDS Day, and we need to know how important it is to still get tested for HIV and PrEP if you can. Well, I'm excited to tell you that Channel Q is partnered with Nurx for this week only to offer our listeners $30 for their at-home test kits. That's right. Visit Nurx.com/Q. That's Nurx.com/Q to get your $30 test kit. These kits are the most discreet way to get tested and on PrEP right from your own home, and they're going to deliver to your house each month. That's right. Nurx.com/Q. All right, we are back listening to Loveline and weighing on our question of the night. Have you ever kept a secret from someone you're dating? And if so, we want to know what it is. So go on our Loveline page, slide into the DMs, and let us know. In the meantime, Miss Rebecca Ishida, my co-host for the night, comedian and therapist extraordinaire, double threat. You're about to walk us into something before the break.
You know, it was funny. I was you know, thinking
just as you do,
just as I do randomly about things. And, you know, what dating in my 40s, right? Yeah. I don't know if we have listeners in the 40s, maybe a lot younger, but dating in my 40s, it was very interesting doing that, you know, getting on the apps. Cause, you know, when I was younger, you met people in person,
right? Yeah.
You know, and at a bar or somewhere. That's how I met my ex-husband.
You had to be in the right place, walk
at the
up
right
to people,
time, or yeah, through totally. Friends.
Yeah.
So now ghosting is you're so able to do that because. You know, you can just meet someone online, you can unmatch them, you can just not call or text them again. There are no connections.
Well, it's
right?
Actually, it's fascinating, the numbers too, because there's been periods of my life while single where I was talking to, and I'm not even kidding, anywhere from 5 to 8 people at one time, which some people might be like, that's it. But trying to navigate 5 to 8 different people that you're trying to date and get to know, because again, here's my big statement. People sometimes misunderstand what the word dating means. Dating means we're not in a relationship. I'm seeing if you're someone I want to be in a relationship
with.
Right? Dating is the exploratory phase. And so dating, you should expect that whoever you're dating might be dating other people because no commitment should be expected yet. And you mm-hmm. start dating someone while their life is already in progress. So there have been periods through apps where I'm dating 5 to 8 people, meaning getting to know to see if there's anyone I want to be more committed to and still accumulating new ones. And it's like trying to keep conversations straight.
But that's amazing
straight.
You can do that. I am not good at that. I'm very much like, I'll just focus on one person at a time.
So,
and see.
Okay. So if you're single
yeah.
and you link with someone and you go on a date, you will then stop trying to match with everyone else based on having gone on one date
with
one person.
Match. I'll still match with somebody. It really depends. Like I met my boyfriend on Tinder, right? And people are probably surprised by that. And so with that, we actually went into a relationship quite quickly. He was ready for commitment. And I was like, you know what? I'm at that age. I want a commitment. And I'm just going to go with that. But I think in the past, I'm not good at juggling. I feel a lot of guilt. I don't know if it's my Jewish guilt or my Japanese guilt.
it's like coming from
guilt.
All sides.
It's
yeah.
somewhere, you know. But one thing I did notice in my 40s was this new thing. Is this choking thing? What is this choking thing when you have sex?
And like why has it come about in your 40s?
I don't know, but that's when I noticed it. I didn't remember the choking prior to my separation divorce.
So
but
on your
choking 40, started.
The night of your 40th birthday, you're like, I want to get choked.
Well, I was still married from? Then. So oh. after I was separated at 42, and now I'm 48. I noticed the choking in those years.
You're like, where's this odd desire to be
but
choked?
It's hot, but some people are scared of that. You
For
know,
sure.
like clients that are like, oh my God, he choked me. What does this mean? Maybe I should leave him.
That is
you
one
know?
Of the more fascinating parts right. of the sexual work in therapy
yeah.
is the what does this mean?
exactly.
And it's always the assumption that it comes from somewhere problematic or traumatic versus maybe they're just creative, diverse,
exactly.
and open, and they're trying things, and they're confident and going with what makes sense to them.
And also the idea that you've set up something safe.
Yes.
So it's safe that you're being choked. I know that
right.
sounds strange.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll unpack this because there's a lot of little juice and gems in this. Listen to Loveline Monday through Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time. Give us a call, 833-568-8669, and weigh in on our question of the night. It's on our Loveline Instagram page. Take a little break. We'll be right back. Hey, did you guys hear that new song, Bastille and Marshmallow? Oh, that's right. We just played it. Yeah, that's right. Rebecca was like, hey, you guys, Marshmallow Bastille did a new song. Have you heard it? And Emmy's like, yeah, we're playing it right now.
Open your ears. And I was dancing to it.
Open up your ears, mama.
It's the old age. It's the old age. It's setting in.
I'm telling you, we got to start doing some like Facebook Live or IG Live while we're off air.
Because
that's when some of the cuckoo comes out. I mean, it comes out on air as well, but... So as we were discussing, you reach these points in your life. Rebecca was saying once she hit her 40s, these interesting sexual drives and creative ways of being were popping out,
yes,
like choking.
Like the choking. But, you know, but I found it quite exciting. And I've had people, though,
at a girl.
What?
You're like, I found it quite exciting.
I like
it.
I think it's exciting, especially if you have some trust that's been established, or maybe even when you don't have some trust established.
So basically anytime, right?
Anytime with anyone. No, but I mean, some people get scared of those things. But I think that, you know, sex can be exciting and varied. Yeah. I mean, that's what's fun about sex.
That's what you aim for.
Right. It's like, you know, it can be rough. It can be short. It can be long. It can be, you know.
And that's the thing. So one of the, you know, and again, weigh in on this, but in my office, one of the number one things that comes in terms of the couples, you know, relational marital therapy that I do is sexual boredom. And mm-hmm. we've been together
yes.
for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. What do
Some
we do?
Some people
spice
not
it
having
up?
Sex at all.
Exactly.
Right?
Which is fascinating. And the work is around diversifying, making creative, making it fun within the context of monogamy or whatever it is you've chosen. And it's about people getting more sexually honest. I was talking about that in the green room about how I work with some people and their work is about sexual honesty. How do I work on going into the vulnerable, fragile parts of myself, which in our culture, I'm not supported in living out or being confident in? And how do I go to this person and tell them all these parts of myself?
Now, that's so important in a relationship. You have to. This makes me think of a time when I was receiving oral sex and I had to actually, like, you know, tilt up to guide. I couldn't tell if I should I say you're missing it.
So wait. Hold on. Let me say. So you just kept maneuvering around their face.
Yes. Like, let me just tilt up a little bit. If you could see me right now, everybody.
Yeah.
And then move a little to the side, or do you just say you're completely missing?
See, that's one way to do it. Instead of telling them what to do, you just move yourself around their
face.
That's
what you do. Just move around. Move around.
That sounds exhausting for the pelvis.
It does.
But good for the abs.
The sexual honesty is so. It is important. And sometimes I think feelings can be hurt, too.
Oh, say more to that.
Like, maybe, like, you're not good at this. No, I'm just kidding.
But that sometimes is the thing you have to deliver, but in a loving way. You know,
in a loving
look,
way.
Sometimes it's really fascinating to see the anxiety that comes with expressing these vulnerable parts of ourselves. And I have moments in my office where a client will say, 5 years in, 10 years in, the sex we've been having is not the sex I've been wanting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really profound. And I try to say the partner that's on the receiving end and hearing that, as difficult as it is, say thank you. Because it's the person saying, like, I want this to work. I care about you. It's me investing in us and our future. And so difficult to say, difficult to hear, but I need you to know this.
Right. No, I think that's really important. I mean, because the truth is,
I've never had that brought to me because I'm such a phenomenal lover.
I imagine you're an amazing lover.
I imagine.
Yes. But no, that, I mean, it does happen, especially when you're in a relationship for a long time. I mean, I was married for 13 years. That wasn't necessarily our issue, but when you, there were a lot of other issues.
That was just the surface, scratch.
That was actually the one probably good thing in the relationship. The other stuff, maybe not so much. You know, because there are always warning signs in the relationship too, but we sometimes decide to close our eyes to those warning signs, but. That's another topic. But yeah, the sexual honesty is so important. And people like to explore different things. I mean, I hear, you know, you hear a lot about BDSM, you know, amongst couples and
it's
lots
really
of role
being
playing.
Discussed a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, it's super, super interesting. When I think about it for myself, all I can imagine is laughing all the way through role playing. But
you, because you skew laughy. Like, you're the person that, like, when in doubt, your response will most likely be humor.
Humor.
You know?
Yeah, laughter.
Which is a good response.
Yeah.
But you're giggly.
I am giggly. That's true. Yeah. You know, but I always am surprised, too, when I do have clients come in to me and they tell me I haven't had sex for 3 years. I'm like, hold up. Rewind. Why wasn't there a point, like, a weekend, like, you know, we haven't had sex in a week? It's just so strange to me that people can go through their lives that way.
3 years.
And 3 years. Like, it's mind-blowing to me.
Well, and what's mind-blowing to me also is if you will allow – like something like 3 years to go by without discussing such a private, important topic. What are the
what
other
else?
Topics?
Exactly. Totally. Yeah. That's
because
exactly what I was thinking
it's
about.
The same system. Like
right.
Your inability or a lack of willingness to go up against the anxiety of discussing difficult to have topics. And that's one of many. And if you can't have that one, you probably can't have other ones too, right? Like what else are you withholding?
I think a lot of times too, what is sort of undiscovered until sometimes later on is that people have their own trauma and they haven't worked through it.
Yeah.
So sometimes certain types of touch or certain types of experiences feel traumatic and people have a heart, well, maybe, you know, avoid sex altogether because they don't want to talk about, oh, this is really triggering me. The person who molested me or traumatized me, touched me in this way, and I can't handle this, or they don't know how to necessarily move through that. So that's like really important work too that I think sometimes people avoid.
And then add gender to that, where we still live in a culture where a lot of women don't feel comfortable being sexually honest or empowered because of what messaging that might give to
yes.
their partner that
right.
she's a slut, that
yeah.
she's had
mm-hmm.
sex with a lot of people. Some guys are intimidated by that. It's not even about mm-hmm. the slut shaming. It's just there's an intimidation factor because some guys' masculinity is tied to they have to be the aggressor or the asserter. What does it mean if the woman's coming to me?
Well, and you know what I think is something we don't talk about a lot is the societal pressures to also be a certain way. So I know as a woman, a heterosexual woman, there are also sort of these things that I grew up with along the way of the way to be sexually. Although I had an open and honest family, still in the messages you get are you're supposed to be contained, you're not supposed to be wild, all of these things that you have to kind of get over. Those are hurdles too.
Okay, so I love your use of the word contained. That was really powerful because, yes, one of the things I'm constantly finding myself saying repeatedly is how good sex, honest sex, fully embodied sex, fully present sex is going to be messy.
Yes.
It's going to be loud. It's about letting your body move in the ways you want it to move, which don't always seem
it's letting your mind go too.
Or, yeah, letting your mind wander.
That's a big piece.
It's about letting
yeah.
go. And I find myself working with a lot of people on just letting themselves let go, not worrying about how will my partner, what my partner think if I make that sound, or how will I look if I allow mm-hmm. my body to just really be present to itself, or mm-hmm. what will they think if I ask for certain things? Like, you know, I work with some people that still haven't communicated the ways that they prefer.
Mm-hmm. People have so much trouble expressing their needs and wants, not just sexually, but just otherwise.
So that's the call yeah. to action that I guess, you know, the double therapists in the room are kind of saying is if you're listening, ask yourself that question. Like, are there parts of me that I'm withholding? And do you want to continue to honor that? Because that's the homework I give a lot of clients mm-hmm. is to find ways to start moving towards expressing that and finding the freedom and the value of that.
Mm-hmm. I think there are so many people that also probably stay in relationships where they hide parts of themselves.
Yeah.
And that's really unfortunate because they could probably be so much more fulfilled, but then that really, you know, that's also stepping up and being more vulnerable.
And that's our question of the night. If you guys haven't weighed in on that, go on our Loveline Instagram page is, have you kept secrets from your partner? And that can be in any capacity. And then the follow-up question is always why? Because that's where the work is, right? Like anything that makes us anxious, whatever we're talking about, that's where that work is. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's all about living a fully authentic, liberated life, which is kind of the theme I have in my own life. I'm constantly tracking myself. What are the areas, the topics, the themes, or what relationships with my life am I holding back who I am?
Hmm.
And how can I push through that? It's become really, really, really meaningful where it might not make sense to everyone, but I'm practicing really being confident in what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I'm wanting, and allowing it to sometimes be awkward or weird or maybe not hot or attractive, but making that be
You're
okay.
You're always hot, Chris.
Say that one more time.
You are always
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Smoking hot.
Darn.
That I mean, I remember that the first time I met you, I'm like, this guy is beautiful.
Aw, I wasn't expecting all that, but thank you. I'll take
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Take it. It's been
but
a rough year.
But that's good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, but as therapists, I think maybe a lot of us do that, right? We're thinking all the time.
Yes,
yeah, I know I do.
I'm always trying to get back in my body.
Right.
I'm in my head. You know, again, that's, I love this topic too. And I just gave, I just did a training, a somatic training on more embodiment because, you know, even people that are very athletic, they're like, oh, I'm in my body. No, the gym, yoga, a lot of that is very forced positions. Mm-hmm. It's not honoring, like, what does my body really want to do in the moment?
My body wants
to sleep.
Wrong
way?
Right now.
Like, Rebecca, what does your body need? Sleep. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to Loveline on Channel Q and on radio.com. If you haven't downloaded the app, do so now with you all day, everyday politics, news, lots of funnies, and then Loveline at night from 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time. Take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Something about codependency.
Oh, right. We are back. You're listening to Loveline, and today in the studio, my sidekick is Rebecca Ishida, therapist, comedian.
Hello.
I love people with a hybrid career. When people ask me what I do, I don't ever know what to tell them. I guess I have a few like dashes in my, I don't even know what to tell them anymore.
I guess I typically say that I'm a therapist, but I was, but I'm so a mom. Like, you know what I'm real? I realize.
So people are like, what do you do? You're like, I'm a mom, mom therapist, comedian, a trifecta.
Yeah, yeah.
You want the mom in that title?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's pretty cool to be a mom, but I have to be honest, I don't like a lot of moms.
That's right. I don't like a lot of therapists. They bore
you know, I thought
me.
I was going to be in the mom club and I was going to like moms. And a lot of moms are pretty not nice women.
What, say yeah. more. What makes you say that?
They're just not. What I'm noticing a
is
lot are
exhaustion?
Like cluster B personality disorders all over the place.
Well, and clue so, in the listeners as to what that means, because that was a little intellectual.
So cluster B personality disorders are the yummiest of the personality
they sure
disorders.
Sure. And she says that, you know, yeah.
Antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, histrionic personality
so,
disorder,
you know,
and narcissistic
so
personality disorder.
So self-centered, sociopathic, and really dramatic.
Very dramatic. Yeah. A lot of push-pull, like, I love you, love bombing, and discard. You devalue you, yeah, it's awesome.
Sounds like my dating history.
Oh. Yeah. but I think I feel like I'm such a mom. It's like so. It's like, and I think it probably shows up in my clinical work too. In turn, you got to be mindful of the caretaking. You got to, you know, I'm a different type of therapist. I think I do self-disclose, and I'm. I don't know how much a part of that is. I will self-disclose to, I bond what I think, connect
I
to people that way.
I think that is what has to happen.
I mean, it's human. I don't know.
I agree with you. I think that, so for those listeners that aren't familiar with, you know, like clinical training, you know, historically therapists are trained to not be a person. Don't bring your real self into the room. You're supposed to be a blank slate and the focus is on, and one of those powerful things I've realized through doing clinical work is that I'm doing my best work when I've really formed a true relationship with
Absolutely.
My client. And number two, I know that my client has gotten to a higher level of health when they have really started to consider and recognize me as an actual person.
Right.
So when a client's like, how are you? Or like, how was your holiday? And they really care. I'm like, this is a healthy person.
Right.
But when someone treats their therapist transactionally as though they're just paid staff, that's a very important thing for me to know diagnostically. Right. And I know we got a lot of work to do, you know?
Right.
So that care is important. I think good therapists are breaking all the rules. I mean, that's one of the number one things I say is go to school if you want to be a therapist and then unlearn everything you were taught, because a lot of it's a problem. My first book, Sex Outside the Lines, part of it, in it's also about, you know, sexual relational health, but part of it's also unlearning all of the myths that we've been raised around through psychology and television. And my new book is coming out in January, Rebel Love.
That's exciting.
Pre-order that bad boy. That's very liberatory. It's feminist, social justice, sex positive, body positive. It is all in there. But yeah, I think the work is unlearning a lot of the things we've been raised with and also clinically taught.
Right. I mean, I think that, you know, if you can relate to people and they can see your vulnerability, I think it helps them to share theirs. It really does. I think it's really impactful to have that kind of connection with your clients.
So let me ask you this. As a therapist, what do you think has been the more transformative or impactful things that you've learned through doing the work? You walk away learning what?
You mean about from the clients or about myself?
I guess about yourself or about the world because of working with clients.
I think what I've really learned is how we are all have our stuff. We all do. And I think what's so important, because I mean, obviously, as a therapist, you often go to therapy, right? I go to therapy. What I haven't liked with past therapeutic experiences is how they've been cut off. The therapist that I remember loved her. I'm sure she's still in practice. Abby Goodman, my first therapist. What I loved about her, she was so validating and kind and loving. And that is the thing I have take away from her. And that's what I want to be to my clients. I don't want to be shaming. I want to be, you know, not judgmental. I mean, I'm there to help them and guide them. And I think it's really a gift to be a therapist, to learn all those things. And I learned from about myself, which is I'm a much better therapist because I've gone through a lot of stuff.
Amen to that.
I mean,
I've
gone through a lot of things, trauma, and I've gone through a lot of grief and loss and divorce. So I have kids.
It's the whole wounded healer concept. You know, I do a lot, a larger portion, I guess it really depends, but a large portion, I'll say it like that. A large portion of my clinical work is done via media, right? Where I have a couple different media platforms, books, lecturing, podcasts, radio, television, and I also have a clinical practice here in LA, but some of the media is where I get to really get out in the world and do some of the transformative, stuff. And, that's kind of what I'm trying to push forward as well, is what you just kind of said, is that like we all have our stuff, but more importantly, it's in our wounding that some of the most transformative, powerful things where they really start to exist. And so it's about kind of reframing our crises or our struggles, because there's so much value in that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's made me a better therapist and a better person to have gone through those things, survive them, and come out on the other side with more skills, a better ability to hold on to myself, which I was not very good at as a younger person. Knowing, like, the idea too of my big thing in relationships was chasing people and trying to get their love. That was my big thing. And really how important it is, if you know your value, how that stops. Instead of the conversation, be like, oh, why isn't he calling? Why isn't he texting? Why isn't he? It's like, where's your value? If you value yourself, you don't engage in those things anymore.
Bam. That's it right there. If you value yourself, that's a good spin. I sometimes say, if you have a lot of self-esteem, you'll set boundaries. You'll say no. You'll check in more with. It's not about, do they like me? Do I like them?
Right. They need to audition for
me.
Do you they, need
not,
to audition
not
for
do
me.
They want me, but do I want them? Or am I liking the way that they're showing up to me? Going on a date saying, let me see if I like them, not do they like me. Like, I love that flip, right? That spin on it. Because we're really trained to seek validation and to be desirable by other people. I'm going to wear what I think they want me to wear. I'm going to get the body that I think I need to have. And
exactly.
It's like, why don't you instead find people that like the body you have versus you trying to get the body you think they want you to have?
Right.
Go on that date as yourself and see if you like them. And you know,
that's why I don't like the games either. Oh, wait 3 days, wait this long to call.
You're on the right show for that. We have a segment where we'll do you remember the rules?
Ugh.
Okay.
That's what just
so
knocked
we have
in
a segment we don't do it weekly where we bust out the rules and I go through a couple of them, and they are no joke, because like we talk about, people follow those. They are outdated. They are sexist. They're offensive because they literally all about the opposite of being real and honest and authentic. Yeah. It's all about manipulation and game playing. Like, there are, you know, things like, if they ask you out on the same day, always say no.
Right.
Like, really? I shouldn't spend time with someone I want to spend time with? Maybe their schedule opened up and they thought of me, reached out, and I should be offended by that and say no? And it's all sorts of things like that where it's just like, oh, man.
That's awful.
It's such a game. And that's not what it's supposed to be about, right?
It really isn't at all.
It breaks my heart, but people buy into that. And a lot of it's these television shows. People watch these dating shows and television, and it reinforces, like, girls need to act this way, guys need to act that way. And, you know, again, this conversation I had on my podcast with Amber about the size of someone's engagement ring.
Oh, my
where
gosh.
They were going in on this article about a girl dumped her husband or her fiance because she was offended at how small the ring was. And I was like, really? Good for him. I'm glad she got rid of him. He dodged a bullet.
Right.
If she has reduced relationship and marriage down to just what you're getting and the ring size, oh, God, good luck in the world.
Right. Yeah. That's
you've lost focus on what it's about. It's about love and commitment and care.
Like, that's
be complimented. Someone wanted to give you a ring.
Right.
Oh, man. Right. All right. We're going to take a break. But before we do, weigh in on our question of the night. Have you ever kept secrets from someone you're in a relationship with? And what are they? Go on our Loveline Instagram page or give us a call 833-568-8669. Take a little break. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. You're listening to Loveline. Still a few more minutes for you guys to get your answers in there to the question of the night. But the ones that are rolling in, they are good. Thank you guys for your honesty. But go on the Loveline Instagram page, like us, follow us, or go on my Dr. Donahue page, my Instagram, slide on into my DMs. You can slide on in there and tell me, send me anything you want. I am mad. 24 hours. I'm there. Okay, so now we're going to be doing our answering our DMs of the night. Are you ready, Rebecca?
I'm ready.
We're going to be bestowing some gems on these people.
That's amazing.
Dropping gems on the peeps, as they say. Okay, dear Loveline. Just FYI, Rebecca, these are very short ones. There are times where it's like a 5-page question.
Oh, okay.
And they're always like so uberly complex, which I love you guys. I love you guys bringing it all out, but these are real simple. Dear Loveline, my ex-boyfriend just got a new girlfriend only a few weeks after we broke up, and I can't stop comparing myself to her. What should I do?
Hmm. That's kind of it's a simple question because I wish I had more context. You know,
that's always how this is. That's the prompt of DMs. I wish you guys were calling and we can kind of talk it out more. But basically, look, I don't know why you guys broke up, who broke up with
exactly.
who, what the reasoning was. But it's difficult when someone you're just in a relationship with enters into a new one with someone else.
And that's so quick. It's very quick.
It can be very quick. And
painful.
Sometimes painful, and you wonder what do they have that I don't have? Because again, I don't know if you were left, if you guys left lovingly. Mm-hmm. But focus more on what's going on in your life.
When you compare, you despair.
When you compare, that's a hashtag. When you compare, you despair.
It's true, though. It's horrible.
Most likely these days, it's possible this person's also creeping on their ex's Instagrams and Facebook pages and whatnot. And so you're giving yourself too much access and information.
And that's like re-traumatization. The good thing is if you can block the Instagram, block the Facebook.
Give yourself space. Yeah. You don't want to know what they're doing.
And you don't want somebody who doesn't want you.
Amen to that.
You know what I mean?
You want to be had. You deserve that desire.
You want to be choked.
You want to be choked, especially in your 40s, because that's the time for that.
Exactly.
30s. What's the 30s a time for?
Hmm.
We'll circle back.
I have no idea. I can't remember that far back.
I wanted you to give
us
a funny.
I was married at
that
time.
I wanted some of them funnies.
Oh, okay.
Because I got Rebecca as my co-host tonight. She is therapist and comedian. I wanted some funnies.
Oh, sometimes I'd be really bored and have sex while watching TV. That's maybe the 30s. Like, I'm just going to sit this way and you can be behind me and
don't
I'm going to watch this. I'm going to watch this episode.
But go to town and do your thing.
But do your thing. Do your thing.
Because you're a giver.
I'm a giver.
That's love.
That's my thing. Codependency.
Yeah.
I'm all about giving.
Not a girl.
So.
All right. Doctor,
but I enjoyed the TV show.
Dear Dr. Chris, which, by the way, I need to ask you what you're watching these days because I'm always looking for new recommendations.
God, I'm a mom. I hardly watch anything. But I'll think about it. Let me think about
that. Dear Dr. Chris, my boyfriend hates that I had a threesome. That's the title of the question.
Oh.
About 6 months ago, I told my boyfriend that I'd had a threesome before. Ever since, he's been inconsolable. Wow. Panic attacks and depression.
Huh?
Says it's all he thinks about. That he can't get it out of his head. What we were doing, what they look like. It wasn't a good experience for me, but it still bothers him. I don't want to break up. I just want to be able to move past this. Wow.
Oh, maybe he should go to therapy.
Yeah, there's some stuff there. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if it's triggering some old trauma he has, some insecurities. Sounds like he has a lot of intrusive thinking, maybe some OCD qualities.
Let's add this to it. There's that ubiquitous, a lot of people don't want to think of or know or recognize the fact that their partner had a sex life prior to them. Right. So there's this like universal idea for some people that I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to think about it. It's highly problematic because, you know, no matter how much we love the person we're with or attracted to them, we are going to be oriented towards and drawn towards other things in the world. And I think it's a problem when couples try to not have to acknowledge or encounter that, mm-hmm. that like you're not going to be everything to everyone. And this kind of ties into that sometimes.
Absolutely.
We're like, I want to imagine that prior to meeting me, you were with no one. You were waiting for me, anticipating meeting me. You were holding out for me. Nah, people get to have like a sexual and relational history.
And who really wants to have that partner?
Yeah.
You want a partner who has had experiences, hopefully, that's had experiences and it has enjoyed things before.
So here's what I'm hoping is happening. I'm hoping that your boyfriend is personally struggling with the depression and anxiety. I hope that he's not shaming you at all mm-hmm. for having had that because you have my support from having done that. While people are single, they can't hold back from doing sexual things because maybe at some point in the future, someone they're with might not want to hear about that having happened. So we're going to like hold off. You know, you got to go through these developmental milestones. So you might not be able to be in this relationship because, again, I don't know where else this kind of thinking might problematically show up. I don't know how healthy this person is, but it sounds like he needs therapy. He's not managing this.
Yeah, well. It might also, I mean, I'm wondering too if it would show up in some kind of jealousy or some upset if she goes out with friends and he feels excluded. I mean, who knows? I don't know if this might be the tip of
the
iceberg.
Where he might get triggered in the future, right?
Yeah.
If she wants to go out alone, he's like, what are you going to do without me? Yeah. That's a good
panic
one.
Panic attacks, though, when I see panic attacks, I think, yeah, you maybe should go work this out. Go see a therapist, talk it out with someone else.
Yeah. If you're in LA, you can come see me or Rebecca. We
because
got
if,
you.
Because if he's obsessing like this, then probably like you mentioned, he's doing that with her.
Yeah.
And on her, because it's like he's maybe emotionally vomiting.
Yeah. And I want to say to the girl, it's not necessarily your job to help him soothe mm-hmm. himself
right.
through this. You've
right.
done nothing wrong. And I like the idea that couples will talk and share about their prior sexuality, because I don't think there's any reason to have to withhold that.
Right.
You do it lovingly. But I think it's okay to discuss those things. I like to talk to people I'm dating about their sexual history. It's how I find out more about them and who they might be and what they might want. So there's an acceptability mm-hmm. in that.
Yeah.
But sorry to hear that, though. That's that's sad.
It's upsetting. Sure.
All right. Here we go. Moving forward. Dear Dr. Chris, I am in desperate need of therapy, but I can't afford it. I'm 24. I work part-time. I just graduated, so I'm searching for a full-time job, but they're hard to come by. Any advice? Basically, cheaper therapy.
Well, right. And there are some really great places out there that do offer sliding scale. And there's a place called the Saturday Center in Brentwood.
That's in LA for those in LA. He might be anywhere across
that's
the country.
True. Okay.
Basically, I'd say this. Universities
right.
often have counseling centers.
Absolutely.
Where students that are in school, aka interns, see clients and they're for sliding scale, go there. But if you Google basically just your area and sliding scale therapy, all these training centers with interns, people that are in school to become therapists, you'll be able to find it that way.
And oftentimes it's quite good because interns are supervised. They
yep.
hopefully they and have good supervision, then you really can find someone that's quality and for a low fee.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worthwhile looking into that.
But therapy can be expensive.
Very. Yeah,
and
sure.
a lot of therapists, some therapists sometimes don't take insurance because of all the loopholes. It's not simple.
No.
It's a lot of work.
It is. Dealing with insurance companies, you need therapy.
There's a therapy that comes just from that, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, they don't make it simple or easy.
No.
What is that tic-tac looking thing on the table?
That was a mint I had in my mouth, but you said I had to take it out.
Why didn't you just chew it up and swallow it and be done with it? It's like sitting there staring at me.
I don't know, because it bothers me. I want to put it in my mouth now, but it's been on this counter.
You guys should see it. It's not like placed with or near something. It's literally just this mint floating off in the middle of nowhere on the counter, just sitting there. It actually looks like a vitamin.
Yeah.
It's a very large mint.
It's quite good. It's like strawberry. It's very delicious.
It's like a very,
quite
very
good.
Large mint. Interesting. Okay, pushing forward. So did you hear about the mom who volunteers as a stand-in mom at same-sex weddings?
Oh.
Yeah. So unfortunately...
I wouldn't do that.
You do?
I would totally do that.
You would actually be very good at that. You're very gregarious and warm.
I would be so good at that.
You'd give
a
lot of hugs.
Because I identify as mom, because I am a mom.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this. But basically, we're still living in a time where some parents won't support their LGBTQ+ children getting married. And so they stay home and people want family at the wedding. So this woman's doing a stand-in. We'll talk more about it. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris, Monday through Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on channelqandradio.com. We'll take a little break. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Sorry, we were talking about television. Guys, hit me up on my DMs. Let me know what you're watching. I need to know. I need to find a new show to binge watch. But more importantly, we're at that time of the night. We're going to talk about our question of the night. Secrets you've kept from someone you're in a relationship with. And we got some doozies. Number one. I'm still in contact with my old friends with benefits. My husband has no idea.
Oh, my.
And I have questions about what you mean when you say still
yeah.
in contact.
Yeah, still in contact. Yes.
All right. Hang in there, babes. We got a lot more. Number two, my boyfriend thinks I'm a virgin.
Oh. Well, that's not so bad.
Here's another one. My boyfriend thinks that I used my savings to pay for my fake boobs. I actually used the profits from my cam modeling that I do that he doesn't know about.
Oh. So another life. She's
yeah.
not sharing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Here's my favorite one. This one's what we call a real doozy of a secret. My wife and I have 3 kids. I recently found out I've been sterile all my life.
What the? Oh my God. I almost had a moment there where I...
Half of the moment.
Wait.
It's worthy of it.
But really though? But really?
That's worthy of that.
Oh my.
Yeah.
That's like devastating, life crashing down upon you kind of stuff.
It sounds like this person's going to keep that secret.
How do you But there's that honesty. How do you continue with? There's so many conversations to be
had.
Well,
let me put it like this: if I'm sterile, and my wife and I have three kids, I have questions for her.
Well, that's right. Those are the questions. The questions are for her, not for him.
Like, but that's what's so interesting
do they all
is like
look the same?
He's got a lot
I mean,
of he's got a lot
man?
Of love and care that he's like, I just want to keep the family unit together, so I'm asking no questions because that might that's the best I can come up with for him. Three kids, which means this is you know, he said recently, so it's
I mean,
not
but is it possible that he became sterile? I don't know. This sounds really complicated. This is devastating.
Call him, me, Rebecca. Questions about this.
Oh my gosh, I'm just my heart hurts.
Yeah, it really does. So let me ask you that. Let me flip it on you. Have you ever kept secrets? You don't have to really reveal them, or you can dance around it. But I mean, have you? Let me ask it like this: have you ever withheld a very powerful, impactful secret from someone you're in a relationship with, a serious one? I haven't.
No,
I'm pretty disclosing.
I'm not somebody who really has secrets, which I think feels really freeing because, you know, if you don't have secrets.
How about anything? Has anything ever been withheld from you, a secret that you then found out about?
Yes.
Oh, touche.
Now I'm going to tell the world about.
Let's go there.
This.
With
I did
Sharon
have
Ryan.
An. I did have an ex who. You know, it's very important to me. The STD doing an STD panel is always important.
Yes.
You always do an STD panel, and I want to see the results. But after. Have being sexual after receiving the STD panel, I then hear, oh, you know, by the way, my ex-fiance had HPV.
Okay.
And not the good kind, the strain 16 and 18, which are the precancer. It's the precancerous type.
Oh,
so
okay.
Thank you very much for that gift.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was really fun to hear. So then you have to, you know, you end up having to deal with that. So secrets can be dangerous and dangerous to your health because strain 16 and 18 for HPV, almost everyone has HPV, but those strains cause precancerous changes on your cervix and can cause cervical cancer.
Well, this is an awkward time, but we have to go.
I just wanted to talk about my cervix a little more, but okay.
As we say in therapy, we've come to the hour. So we're going to pick up with this next week, as we say. Please pay. Rebecca, it's been awesome having you. We're going to have
you
back. I love being around you. Where can people find you?
I do have an Instagram account, which is Hungry Becca. You'll find pictures of my kids, me and my food, because I like to cook a lot. And yeah, you could find me there. DM me.
All right. And they got to come out to your comedy, too.
Yeah, my comedy. Yep.
You guys have an awesome night. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back on Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Emmy Q is going to be doing her Freak on the Streets. Always fascinating to see what people are up to. Have an awesome night. We'll see you soon.